Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we did it.
Happy Ennis Day, Anthony.
From now on, can we call it the Ennisversary?
The Ennisversary, yeah, just for you. Just for you.
Oh, it's such a weight off the
shoulders. How do you feel right now, man? You need to walk me through the emotions that you felt over that little period of time.
So, like, usually when Shams confirms a quote-unquote report that is just official release, like an official release from a team, I kind of laugh at Shams or like other reporters when they do that.
Let's explain that just to the people listening. Is if you're on like the Lakers media relations email list, we all get that email, right? Yeah. So so I got that at the same time you got that. Tanya Ganguly got it.
They tweeted
Shams,
it.
The Shams got it, right? And so that cracks me up too when Shams is like, inside sources say, right? Like, we got a mass email, dude. Come on.
My email says, but usually I'll like poke fun at him over it. And that's the case with all reporters. Like I like to tweak reporters every so often. I couldn't even do that. Like I was in such a great mood. We don't have to watch this guy play basketball anymore. We don't have to head into next season with even the slightest possibility that we have to care about the way this dude plays basketball. If anything, if we see him again, it'll be for another team, and it'll be all the more fun to watch him play basketball. This is about the best thing that could have possibly happened this offseason.
Yeah, that's right. This is the pinnacle. Everyone can go home now. Turn off your notifications. I'm looking at Tyler Ennis is trending on Twitter right now and wondering if that's the last time that's ever going to happen. And I feel awful because like he is a super nice dude. Like he is very approachable, one of the more like approachable guys on the team. Just the way he played basketball was always, we've talked about this, like offensive to me.
Yeah.
Like there's just like a certain, I don't know, motor issue. I don't know what it was, but it was like way too casual. I don't know.
It was that he played way too casual for where his skill level was at. Like Garrett Anderson was, I think he was a left or a right field. I think he was a left fielder for the back then it was the Anaheim Angels. And all of my friends hated Garrett Anderson because they said, it just looks like he's coasting out there a bunch. And I always used to tell him like, no, he's just really freaking good. And he's going to make plays look smoother because he's really freaking good. Whereas like Ennis is not really freaking good. In fact, he's really freaking bad. And he plays as if he's really freaking good. And like you have the 50-50 balls that he just doesn't seem to get to, rotations he seems to miss, opportunities to step in and take a charge that he just kind of swipes at. That like those are the things that you kind of make up for your lack of ability with effort type of stuff. And he went the opposite direction. He was like, okay, I know I'm terrible, but I'm going to also not really try that hard or appear to try that hard.
I think what it is with all of us is we secretly or not so secretly would love to have had the opportunity to play in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
And so we see a guy who it's either like, oh, wow, that guy is so talented, I cannot relate to him. But there's some degree of relatability to Ennis in that he's not particularly tall. He's not that athletic, right? Where it's like, I can see myself, not myself personally, but fans in general, right? Yeah. Can see themselves in him. And it's just like, oh God, what I would do if I had that opportunity on the court. But
right.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the 30 for 30 on, and where we find out what kind of dirt he had on Luke, on Magic and Palinka to stick around as long as he did, to get the opportunity that he did. That'll be, quite the nugget. We should probably move on from Tyler Ennis.
Yeah.
And so today's show, look, a whole bunch of stuff was said, and Pete and I usually record our shows at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I try to put them up at 9 o'clock every night, Pacific time. Given everything that's been going on, that just wasn't an option. So we're recording a little earlier tonight, and I'm going to release this as soon as we're done talking. And the reason for that is because we had how many reports would you say we had today? About 7 or 8, like from across of.
Yeah.
That's an insane number for the same story. and it's going to continue like that until we get some kind of resolution here. So what Pete and I are going to do is we're going to try to use the years that we have had either paying attention to this or covering this, in my case, aggregating this, and just kind of walk you through, all right, what certain reporters reporting certain things might have to say about the team or the leak that might be behind said leak. And we're gonna try to get through that and also make some sense of it and maybe make a prediction heading into the weekend on how this is all going to play out.
You guys sift through the BS.
Exactly.
That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. I'm way too verbose. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find us on Twitter. We're going to dive right in here. The first thing that I find interesting, and this is how I'll lay the foundation for the conversation, and I'll let you disagree or agree with the theory here, and we'll go from there, is that I think, first and foremost, I think LeBron wants to be a Laker. And that's backed up by the four entertainment sources, from people that I talk to behind the scenes. Like, from people who just – it's crazy how many people are operating under the assumption that LeBron is heading to the Lakers. And with that is step A or domino A, I think it's from there with he wants to come to the Lakers, but he also wants to come to the Lakers with help. And one of the interesting things that I'm seeing here is that LeBron just kind of letting it be known that he wants to be a Laker or that he might be a Laker with or without Paul George or Kawhi. Like, you would think for me that that'd be enough for him to for like Paul George to say, OK, yeah, I'm going to be a Laker. But it doesn't seem to have been thus far. And so what I kind of think is going on is LeBron wants to be a Laker, and the best way he can help the Lakers improve their chances of landing Kawhi without giving up the farm is by offering up whatever leverage he can for the Lakers and saying, look, it doesn't matter. They aren't up against this crazy deadline that people seem to be reporting. And you guys don't have to operate as if it's Kawhi or I'm not coming at all. And that helps the Lakers go to the Spurs and say, actually, we can probably wait you out on this. What do you think about that as like the foundation upon which everything else is kind of rolling down from?
So I think that the notion that LeBron really wants to be a Laker is a good place to start. I could kind of look at it from that opposite view that you do, though, in that if I'm LeBron, this is probably the point in time where I have the most leverage over the Lakers. I haven't signed on yet.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
So I really want to be there, but they don't have me committed yet. So if I'm LeBron, I'm going to try and get what I want out of the situation, which may be a little different than what the Lakers want right away. If I'm LeBron and I'm 33, about to turn 34 years old, I want Kawhi. I don't really care that much about the young guys in exchange for a top 5 to 7 player in the league. Mm-hmm. And this is my time to be able to lean on them a little bit to be like, hey, you should probably get this done, right? That said, you don't want them to, like you said, sell the farm. So I could see it playing out from either angle. I'm not terribly concerned about that, but he's not signed on the dotted line. And when this is released on or on Friday, this is releasing tonight. On Friday is LeBron's big opt-out or opt-in date. So we're going to learn a lot about what happens tomorrow.
We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we'll keep on keeping on with this conversation. So I think both of those points, and this is actually going to be a theme for the entirety of the night, is that both of those points can be true at the same time.
Right? Absolutely.
And that's, you know, what I talked about this in yesterday's show with Matt Moore, and we said that, like, yes, sometimes you get contradicting reports. That doesn't mean that any of that information was any more or less true, or that information didn't cross the plane or wasn't sent out, wasn't leaked out. It just means that it came from different sources because there were different parties here. And, you know, I still come back to with LeBron. Look, the one thing that he figured out early on is that he has the power with his talent and with his brand and with how profitable he helps all of these organizations become immediately upon showing up. He has realized, I have a ton of leverage here, but I don't have that leverage while I'm under a long-term contract. And right now, he's not under any contract with anybody. And it's going to be interesting to watch this all play out, because if let's say the Lakers strike out completely on Kawhi and Paul George decides to stay in OKC, even though I still remain immensely dubious of the reports that are coming out of there. But let's say the Lakers strike out completely. Now LeBron's going to go back to Dan Gilbert tail between his legs. Like, that's not how he's going to operate. He's still going to try to find some way to find leverage here. My question to you is, where would he find that leverage from? Or would he just accept being a Laker and make the roster better as the Lakers can while he's here?
I mean, the worst case scenario for LeBron, who dragged Kevin Love and George Hill and Jordan Clarkson to the finals. The worst case scenario for LeBron is he signs, he's alone, he strikes out on those guys, and the Lakers have max cap space while having freaking LeBron James, the city of Los Angeles, and a nice young core. That point, they really start to lean on the Spurs in trade negotiations for Kawhi. Because, and again, now if Kawhi goes by the wayside, I mean, is LeBron willing to wait a year to get the second star in there? I don't know. But I think he does. And I think that, like, that second star, he committed to Cleveland before Kevin Love got moved,
mm-hmm.
right? He got moved about a month later for Wiggins. And it's not like the Lakers' young assets are going to go away. And, you know, Kyrie was still a baby when he signed over there. So they didn't have that second star when he signed with Cleveland for the second time. So, that's the worst case scenario for him, and it's probably not that bad. That's a really compelling pitch.
I want to kind of shift our focus just slightly here to back to this Kawhi thing. And it's interesting. The three reporters who seem to have the loudest voices in the room regarding to the story here are Woj. Obviously, he's always going to have one of the loudest voices in the room. Windhorst, because of his ties to LeBron, and Ramona Shelburne, because of her ties to the Lakers. Now, you have some, you know, Sam Amick, he had the report about the Lakers offering up or getting ready to offer a Godfather offer, though that never seemed to come to fruition. You've had other people, kind of Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post offered up his 2 cents and said that the Lakers are trying to acquire a first-round pick from Denver in exchange for taking on one of their bad contracts. But for the most part, it's those three reporters. It's Woj, Wendy, and Ramona. And what I find interesting here is Woj kind of, like, for the first time really ever, has seemed kind of like the odd man out, right? Because Wendy has direct sourcing from LeBron James' camp. Ramona has direct sourcing from the Lakers' camp. And now Woj has been very closely tied to R.C. Buford over the years. But Woj very obviously didn't have anything on the Lakers draft night, right? Like, he had everybody was lasered in on whatever this or that and the other. But for the most part, the Lakers once again had him kind of befuddled. And so what it seemed to me, and you can call me crazy here, but as this has all kind of been playing out, it seems like, all right, Ramona's offering up the Lakers side of things. Windhorst is offering up LeBron's side of things, and Woj is just kind of, for lack of a better term, mouthpiecing for the Spurs. And that's where you got his initial report that they were looking for the moon from the Lakers when they didn't really have any leverage here. And I've kind of paid attention all day to Twitter, but it seemed to me like you were a little iffy on whether the Lakers are making even Brandon Ingram available. And then that wound up being refuted by Tanya Ganguly anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know if they're at that point of the negotiations, right? Exactly. And I think the Lakers are trying to, like you said, Ramona is their person to kind of leak things through the media, and Tanya has her sources. But I think you have to, as a fan, to consider where are they getting their information from, and what motivation does that person have? Mm-hmm. Anything that's leaked to Ramona or Tanya, who are both fantastic at their jobs.
Yep.
If it's coming from a source in the Lakers organization, they're leaking that for a reason, right? So, for example, the stuff about Brandon Ingram. He seems like probably the most obvious guy to include in a trade for Kawhi. So what if things don't work out with the Kawhi trade? And now you've got this young guy who's been in the center of all of these trade rumors. It's been out there in the media that if they handle it different, that the Lakers were more than willing to trade Brandon Ingram, but they were not, it didn't work out. And then, you know, you come back later and it's like, oh, hey, Brandon, you know, you have to protect your guys. Like, you remember
this derailed Lamar Odom's career.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Like, do you remember, was it Stephen A. Smith? I don't remember the show he was on, but he sounded so depressed when they talked to him that night, that which was just a crazy night. But that was pretty much it for Lamar. Like, his career never recovered after that. And I don't think Brandon is that type of guy, and I think Brandon would be fine ultimately. But still, it's preferable to, like, you don't have your kids thinking that they are in the middle of trade rumors until they're actually traded, right? And then you break the news to them in person, if you can, over the phone. Make sure they don't find out through, you know, watching on television or text from their friends or something like that, right? But, like, the Lakers are going to protect who they can protect. But, I mean, it's Kawhi Leonard. The Lakers are going to offer somebody, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just – it's going to happen, and it's nothing against any of those guys, but you got to protect them from the Lakers stand end of things, because they don't know if it's going to work out.
Do you think they started with Ennis?
I think that's what it, yeah, that's probably what happened. And then they were like, how about you shoot him into space just so we know you're serious?
And, okay. Here's we're going to take one more quick second here. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation. I'm sorry, Tyler Ennis. That was mean. I don't feel bad.
No. You don't get to do that.
I don't feel bad.
You have leaned into this for years now, Anthony. You don't get to feel bad for anything about Tyler Ennis. Like, I should feel bad because he's a nice guy. And I'm being a bad person right now. I'm sorry, Tyler Ennis.
See, that's the thing about, all right, this is kind of a bit of a pet peeve with me, with the people who, and it's impossible to avoid, by the way, but the whole, like, because so-and-so is a nice guy, they get kind of like the soft treatment there on their way out the door. Whereas, like, D'Angelo Russell got crapped on during the entirety of his time as a Laker. And then after he was a Laker, the beat just kind of threw whatever shade they could while that was happening. And that was, from what I've heard, a direct result of how big of a dick he could be with the beat reporters. Like, yeah, it's cool Tyler Ennis was a nice guy, but if that's the first thing you hear about a blind date.
Right.
But anywho.
Great personality, yes. Well, I mean, for me, especially being around it this season, I think that – so I have a bit of a different ethic than pretty much everybody else that's in mm-hmm. the building, in that I'm very much outwardly a fan. My allegiances are on my sleeve, and I'm very upfront with everybody on kind of where
– I wish everybody was that way.
Well, that's my preference too, but it's also like, I'm the new guy, and it's, who am I to say how anybody else should be doing what they're doing? But I will say, everybody who covers the team is a person with thoughts and feelings on how they do things. And to me, the whole, like, journalistic ethic of being emotionless and removed just so you can report on it, it would be great if it worked that way, but it doesn't. And what ends up happening is those true feelings end up seeping out, even if they're not intentional. But you can tell certain people that don't like Kobe, right? Or things like that. you can see that. Like, just be straight with us. Like, we can deal with that. And I totally get it. Like, it's journalists are raised and taught to be a certain way, that this is how it's supposed to be. And who am I to go against that? For anybody else, it's not my personal choice. But I think what ends up happening is that those feelings end up, like, simmering up to the top, where it's like, all right, this is just, like, passive aggressive now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say it, you know?
It's just a giant subtweet. No, I completely agree. And look, it's one thing when you're dealing in politics that you wanna kind of play it down the line as best you can, right? But when you're, and even then, like, you and I both know that isn't the case in how politics are covered in 2018. But when it comes to sports, like, we're all a branch of the entertainment business here. Like, I actually kind of feel bad for players, because they do spend all day, I would imagine. Like, I would imagine Kuzma, Hart, Ingram, Lonzo to a lesser extent. Like, these guys probably spent a good amount of time on their phone today, just kind of seeing and refreshing Twitter to see, all right, what might be going on here. And And that's in that sense, I feel bad for him. But it's all part of this like entertainment kind of juggernaut, and this just happens to be a part of said juggernaut. That yeah, I mean, reporters are going to try to play down the middle, but it's impossible. And with something as lighthearted as sports can be, I think we can, you know, we can stand a little bit here and there. I don't think it would hurt anybody.
For sure. Well, let's
get back to it.
Yes, let's get back to sifting through the BS through our very biased eyes. Mm-hmm.
Was there anything today that you saw reported that just screamed of this was done with a purpose?
I was fairly surprised at how quiet today was, to be honest. Yesterday was more of the fireworks. But for me, like, everything that Woj says right now just screams, like, the Spurs saying, please, somebody throw me a lifeline. Even yeah. Something like the Celtics popping up from – and I don't know if you saw – his name's Adam Himmelsbach. I don't know if I have his name right. And so he's a Celtics guy in terms of covering the team. And he made a comment like – we've heard these things nationally about the Celtics making a play for Kawhi, but locally nobody's hearing anything. Like, there's nothing close or on the horizon, or even like hasn't even gotten off of the ground. And to me, like, part of me wonders if that's like the Spurs trying to play on Magic's competitiveness, right? Be like, oh, you're going to lose out to the Celtics to get Kawhi Leonard. And that, but the Spurs have to create an illusion, if one is not actually there, of there being a better alternative for them. They're going to try to either say, oh, well, we think we can work things out with Kawhi and he'll re-sign with us. That's their best option, right? Then secondly, they're going to have to create other trade scenarios where they're like, oh, well, we don't, you know, that's a fine offer, Lakers, but we got something better over here, as a main way of trying to sweeten the pot. But every day that goes by, for now, that gets their leverage gets a little worse and worse. And so, like, Sean Devini posted something today, an article where he was talking to a league executive where it's like the Lakers package for Kawhi is going to be a skeleton of what it is now 2 weeks from now. So those are the things that stood out to me. How about you?
No, I think I completely agree. And regarding the other thing that really caught my eye today was the potential package from Philly, because like I wanted to offer you the opportunity to talk about something that was very obviously done with a purpose. But the one that I actually kind of believed here was Philly's potential package for San Antonio and why that might be alluring to them. And it's something that you had mentioned previously on this show, right? That if the Spurs are interested in continuing to compete at the end of Popovich's career, much like the Lakers try to do with Kobe, they're going to take pieces that are going to help them win now, right? Upside isn't really a factor when Popovich might not be around in 5 years. And I think the package that was rumored from Philadelphia was Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and the Miami first round pick in 2020 or 21 or something like that.
Yeah.
And if you're San Antonio, I think the Lakers package, if they are indeed offering it, of Ingram and a couple first round picks, I never believe for a second that they offered up both Ingram and Kuzma. But if they are offering up Ingram and two future first round picks, I think that is an objectively better package that you can get back because of Ingram being cost controlled and being younger than both of those guys. He's what, 6 years younger than Robert Covington right now?
Seven.
Yeah. And so I think if in the general sense, I think that's just an objectively better package to get back for Kawhi is another player who could potentially turn out to be a superstar, but the Spurs might not be seeing it that way.
Yeah, that's very much possible. And that is going to really guide how they approach this, right? Is if Popovich wants to leave the team in the best possible position going forward. And I've heard a few people say that, like Zach Lowe mentioned this in his, he had a really good piece today. Zach Lowe, you know, said that Popovich is a pragmatist and is looking to put the franchise first. And, you know, if he wants to do that, to me, yeah, and this isn't just as a Laker fan. It's I'm trying to remove myself and look at it objectively. Of all of the packages that have been rumored for him, Ingram is easily the objectively the singularly best asset that's being offered to them. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of entire packages, but like the best of single asset of anybody. And now maybe Boston throws Jaylen Brown in there. I personally don't think Brown is as good of a prospect as Ingram does, but there are some people who do, and it's a defensible position at least. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about like Šarić, who's a perfectly good player, right?
Yeah, I said he's fine.
Covington's very good player as well. If you're talking about those type of guys, like, I don't know, what is San Antonio trying to do at that point? Like, you're not competing for titles. You're just, I mean, you're not even particularly close or on the way to that. To me, like, breaking it down and rebuilding is probably the best route that San Antonio can go. And to me, if they would be wise to actually try and shed some salary alongside Kawhi Leonard in terms of, like, their long-term health. But we don't know if that's the direction they're going to go in.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, if you want to do, like, a three-team deal and maybe Atlanta gets involved here and you give a first-round pick to Atlanta to take on some of the Spurs' salary and you try to make it work that way, then it starts to make even more sense for San Antonio. But I wanted to ask you this, too, because this has been one of those things that has been flying around quite a bit and has gained quite a bit of steam in terms of people believing it. But there's this thinking out there that the Spurs are going to, like, if the Lakers offer a package, a 10 out of 10 package in terms of value that they can get right now, and say Boston was to offer like an 8.5 or Philly was to offer an 8.5 or an 8, that they might go with Philly or Boston's just because they don't want to send Kawhi West, and let alone West to the Lakers. And how have you processed that? Because I just don't see that. And Lowe kind of touched on that too. I just don't see them operating that way.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think teams that operate that way are dumb. And like whenever you're looking outward towards somebody else and you're judging your decisions based on somebody else rather than what's best for you, I think that's a fool's errand right there. But that said, Anthony, have the Spurs ever been in a position like this? It's not like no. Aldridge, where he's like, oh, trade me because I'm not shooting enough contested 18 footers. Please change the offense for me. Okay, now I'm happy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a different deal with Kawhi, and I don't know how they operate. And the fact that, or the rumor that Pop is close to the end of his coaching career, who knows how much longer Buford has, like that's a franchise that is very suddenly in transition with this news about Kawhi. And we just have, as long and as stable as they've been, we have no basis of comparison for what they're going to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, we'll send everybody off until the weekend. I'm trying. Usually I record a little bit longer for Friday episodes because it's the weekend and people go on trips on weekend, especially during the summer. But I'm going to keep this one a little bit shorter here, and I'm just going to cut to it. Do you have any predictions on how this weekend plays out? Like, do you think I'll have to record an emergency podcast because of a Kawhi trade by the end of this?
I'm going to say no on the Kawhi trade.
Why is that? Kawhi.
I don't think they're close enough. And I don't think San Antonio feels, perhaps they should, but I don't think they feel the sense of urgency to get it done right now.
I said I was going to keep it short, but I keep asking you questions. For the Lakers, they wound up being better off letting Dwight walk and tanking and getting those high-end draft picks. Do you think that's a viable strategy here for the Spurs? Like, if they're so unconvinced about Brandon Ingram, if they're so unconvinced about Lonzo Ball, if they're so reluctant to take on Robert Covington's contract and having to pay Dario Saric, I think it's 2 years from now or 1 or 2 years from now, are they better off just saying, all right, we'll try to convince you at the end of this thing, and if we can't, you can walk, and we'll just go straight into tank mode?
I don't think so, no. I think that they need to cash that in. They don't have anything else that can get. So if it's not Ingram, right? Like, they really liked Kuzma last year in the draft. I don't know how they value different guys, and I don't necessarily think that they don't like Ingram. I think that, to me, Ingram seems like a very Spursy type of player.
He is. It's crazy.
And
so is Lonzo.
So it's Hart. Yeah. Right. And so I can't speak to their valuation of that, but they are not going to have a better opportunity to cash in. And like, if they're going to tank, you know, so for example, let's make a Lakers analogy. This would have in no way been practical, but would the Lakers have been better off had they traded Dwight Howard at the trade deadline that year, where things obviously weren't working out, move him to somebody who wants him for a couple of firsts? Like that it was not practical for them to do that, but that is a bit of a missed opportunity. Powell, the last couple of years of his career with the Lakers, had been constantly as a part of trade rumors.
Always.
The Lakers, there was a rumor, if I remember right, the Kings had like the 10th pick in the draft or something like that and offered it for Powell, and the Lakers said no. And then the last season of his contract, they wanted to get a late first. People were only offering seconds, and then eventually Powell just walked, right? And it's not like the Lakers were a championship contender in that time either. So, like, those little things are missed opportunities for an organization that are part of the reason why the Lakers were bad between that 2014 and before this past season. So if the Spurs want to avoid that, they need to start cashing in chips while they still have value. So I think they need to make that move rather than just letting Kawhi walk.
Yeah, I think so too. And frankly, it's like we've talked about, and this has been the theme that we have had on the show, is that the sooner that they make this deal, the more leverage that they have, and the longer that they wait, the less leverage that they're going to have. Because they definitely, Matt said it on the show last night, it's been a constant theme nationally that they can't head into next season with Kawhi on the roster. And it's not like, you know, the longer this goes on and Boston is reluctant, it's not like they're going to wake up one morning. Danny Ainge is going to wake up one morning and say, you know what? I'll take on Kawhi for Jaylen Brown now. Why not? You know, that's just, I just don't think that's how Danny Ainge operates. Maybe if Jerry Colangelo was still involved with Philadelphia, I would believe that, because I think Jerry Colangelo was a terrible GM. But as it stands right now, they're holding tight to it. And if anything, they went in the opposite direction and made a very hinky-esque trade on draft night, right? And so for the Lakers, it behooves them to just wait this out, just kind of let this play out. If the Spurs panic and they say, okay, fine. By the way, would you even trade Ingram for Kawhi?
For me, my like walk away point is one of the three, and this is a little different than something I've said before when this topic has come up, because LeBron is somewhat attached to this, and like securing the like two of the best players in the NBA kind of changes the dynamic a little bit. For me, the Spurs can have one of the Lakers' big three, quote unquote, young prospects of Lonzo, Ingram, or Kuzma, and two other assets, be it players or picks or a combination thereof. So if you want to do Ingram, Josh Hart, and a first, Ingram and two firsts, Lonzo, Hart, you know what I mean? Like any combination of that, I would do that. Because I do think that secures LeBron if he's not secured right away. Now, two-part question for you is, do you think the Lakers do that? And then secondly, what if the Lakers know they already have LeBron in the bag? That totally changes their negotiation style, right? Like LeBron would probably prefer Kawhi's going to be signed, but if they know he's coming, are they going to freak out and try and make it? And this is why I don't think a deal's done, is I think more than not that the Lakers do know that LeBron is coming, and they're not going to like be like, oh my God, I feel all of this pressure, even if that's the media narrative. So I know I went all over the place on that, but yeah, do you do that trade, and how does that change things if they know they have LeBron?
I think I do it. Let's see. I do it for Ingram and one of the other assets. And it depends. Like if the Spurs somehow are just randomly adamant that they want Zubats in a first, like, okay, fine. Like Zubats doesn't really count as an asset to me, because I think he's getting cut by the end of this week anyway. But
I want to be clear too. Like that, what I said is my walk away point. That's mm-hmm. not the place that I start negotiations.
Oh, at. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I started my negotiations with Tyler Ennis earlier.
That's a spirit.
but I would say, though, that yeah, I would say, you know, it would suck to part with Ingram. And I think if Ingram was to go to San Antonio, I would buy all the Brandon Ingram stock that I could possibly get my hands on, because I think I really believe in him, and then I really super believe in him with under Pop's tutelage. But I also think, like, to the point you were making about LeBron, I think he would be on the table if there was any concern about whether or not they could get LeBron. Like, that deal would already be done. I think that deal of Ingram and two firsts, that gets it done. That the Spurs walk away from the negotiating table, and they probably don't feel great about it, but I think they walk away from it and they say, well, given the situation, we do have a 21-year-old, 6'9" dude who played point guard last year and did so fairly well and is continuing to improve. He's improved in both years that he's been in the league. Like, if I'm the Spurs, I walk away from that and I say, okay, it's not great. I lost Kawhi. That sucks. But at least there's something to build with here. But I think the fact that it doesn't appear as if Brandon Ingram has been really on the table thus far tells me that it goes back to what Magic said, right? When he said, look, if I'm still sitting here 2 years from now and we still don't have anybody, I'll step down. I don't think you say something like that unless you know something else going on behind the scenes. And you combine that with the fact that Brandon Ingram hasn't been on the table yet, and the way people are operating out here as if LeBron is definitely going to be a Laker at the end of all of this. It tells me that the Lakers are operating and how desperate the Spurs have been. Because the Spurs don't – the Spurs reaching out, oh, I swear Boston's interested. Oh, I swear Philadelphia's interested. It's just the desperation that we see from the leaks from San Antonio tell me that the Lakers are slow playing this, and I don't think they slow play this if there's any chance that it costs them LeBron.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And it's funny you brought up Magic's at the press conference and Jim bussing himself, which is a little different in that Buss was saying, and within 3 years, we'll be back, right? It's like, how the hell do you know what's going to happen in the next 3 years, right? Whereas Magic's like, next week, we're going to be some things are going to be going down, right? So it is different. And then, but just Magic was feeling himself in that presser, man. Like, Plaschke was there, which is always an adventure. And Plaschke like was talking about do you feel pressure in this position that you're in? And Magic was just like, MF-er, do you know who I am? Like, I am Magic Johnson. I have been to 9 NBA finals, won 5 championships, you know, like so to me, like there was, it had a sense of like a victory lap type of like,
yeah,
pre-celebration, and who knows, I'm probably putting,
he's like,
more meaning,
dude, I just drafted 2 white guys, how confident do I have to be?
He's like Heisenberg, he's like, say my name, Plaschke. Say my name.
Exactly. If in terms of predictions for me, I because it behooves the Spurs to get something done, I think something gets done. Because like they can try to operate and they can try to leak all they want, but at the end of the day, I trust in the Spurs to try to get something done here. And even if it's 50 cents on the dollar, 45 cents, 35 cents on the dollar, that's 35 cents that they aren't going to have in February at the trade deadline.
When do you think that gets done?
I've already told I'm supposed to go to a like a pool party up on in this apartment complex. They have this like crazy pool up there, and there's supposed to be this pool party, and I've already told them that I can't go this weekend. I think I'm going to be working all weekend because of how quickly I think this is all going to kind of come to formation.
Interesting. All right.
We'll see. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. That'll do it for this week of the Locked On Lakers podcast. And I want to give you guys all a shout out. We had by far the biggest week that we've ever had in terms of since we've gone from Audio Boom. Man, I already forgot them. Sorry, guys. Audio Boom to Megaphone. This has been by far the biggest week that we've ever had. So shouts to everybody, the iTunes questions, the listeners, the subscribers. Thank you, Pete, for your bringing over your Twitter army. Thank you to the guests who've shown up this week. It's been a lot of fun. It's going to continue to be a lot of fun. I'm calling this right now. We're covering a playoff team next season. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think at the very least we're covering a playoff team.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll probably
goodbye,
talk.
Goodbye, Tyler.
Tyler. Oh, Tyler.